When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Between the shadows of reality and the fringe of our own fears lurks a world of monsters. Strange creatures and frightening phantoms who test the very boundaries of our science and superstition. It's a realm of mystery and legend, a place of fact and fear. This is Monstro Bizarro.
We were driving to St. Louis, and we stopped in Louisiana, Missouri, and we saw something that came out of the woods. It was some kind of an ape, or an animal, or a monster.
Joan Mills and Mary Ryan were driving south on Highway 79, bound for St. Louis, Missouri, when they decided to pull into a shaded picnic area for a lunch break. The spot was just north of Louisiana, Missouri, a small town on the eastern edge of the state where the Mississippi River carves a winding border among cornfields and vast forested hills which spread for miles along the famous waterway. By all accounts, it would have been the perfect spot for a picnic. That is, until something monstrous emerged from the woods. As Joan and Mary were eating, they began to smell a rank, revolting odor. They were recoiling from the stench when Joan saw something walk from the brushy thicket a short distance away. She pointed in horror as Mary turned to look. In a report filed with the Missouri State Highway Patrol, Joan Mills stated,
"I turned around and this thing was standing there in the thicket. The weeds were pretty high, and I just saw the top part of this creature. It was staring down at us."
The creature was tall and primate-like. As it began to approach the women, it made a strange gurgling noise. The apish abomination walked upright on two legs, with its arms dangling low to its knees, according to Mary Ryan.
"It had hair all over the body, as if it was an ape, yet the face was definitely human. It was more like a hairy human. The arms were partially covered with hair, but the hands and palms were hairless. We had plenty of time to see this."
The terrified women jumped to their feet and ran toward their car. They quickly got inside and locked the door. Joan frantically looked for the keys, but couldn't find them. She realized that in her haste, she had left her purse sitting on the picnic table where the creature now stood. The car keys were inside. The thing now began to walk towards the car. When it reached the vehicle, it placed its hands on the hood and then came around to the door. The women were absolutely frantic. Joan pressed the silver ring on her Volkswagen steering wheel that sounded the horn. The brash noise caused the creature to jump and move back. Joan continued to honk the horn, forcing the creature to retreat further. The women watched as it returned to the picnic table and sniffed around their lunch. After a few moments, it scooped up one of their abandoned sandwiches and shoved it into its mouth. It rummaged through their other items, including the purse, before it finally ran back into the woods and disappeared from view. Joan stopped honking the horn and waited several moments before deciding it was safe enough to jump out of the car and grab her purse. Once she did and got the car started, the women sped down the turnout road and screeched back onto the highway. Whatever it was that lurked in those woods, they never wanted to see it again. Mills and Ryan passed through the small town of Louisiana and kept driving south on Highway 79 until they eventually reached St. Louis. Once there, they immediately contacted the Missouri State Highway Patrol and filed an official report. They knew no one was likely to believe their story, but they felt it was important to report it anyway. Who knows what the thing would have done if they hadn't retreated to the safety of their car? In Joan Mills' own words,
"We'd have difficulty proving that the experience occurred, but all you'd have to do is go into those hills to realize that an army of those things could live there undetected."
At that moment, she had no way of knowing Missouri was on the cusp of one of the strangest and most notable monster cases to ever creep out the American backwoods. Welcome to Monstro Bizarro, where hair-raising tales of mysterious monsters and paranormal horrors come to life. In this episode, we'll resume the tale of one of my favorite strange but true monster mysteries, that of Momo, the Missouri Monster. As we learned in the previous episode, sightings of a bizarre, Bigfoot-like creature took hold of the small town of Louisiana, Missouri, and particularly the family of Edgar Harrison, beginning on July 11, 1972, after Edgar's children saw a scary, hairy thing in their backyard. After more citizens reported similar incidents throughout the month, the local police got involved in what was a totally unexpected problem for the town. Newspapers and television coverage spread the story far and wide, bringing in carloads of sightseers and monster hunters, along with several paranormal investigators who began to uncover even more possibly related incidents. The plot, as they say, thickens. The more Momo was publicized and investigated, the more it became apparent something big and hairy may have been stalking the region for a much longer period of time. The heavy news coverage prompted other witnesses to come forward with reports which, prior to then, would have seemed irrelevant or perhaps crazy. Subsequent investigations by police and paranormal investigators brought out even more. As these were tied together, a monstrous case began to build. One of the most significant tie-ins was the harrowing experience of Joan Mills and Mary Ryan 1 year earlier. The spot where they were confronted by the creepy, ape-like figure was only 2 miles from Marzoff Hill. Edgar Harrison himself noted that a family in the area told him their son had seen a big, tall, black, ugly thing in the vicinity of a nearby abandoned school building in July of 1971. This is interesting since there's no way this witness could have known about Mills and Ryan's corresponding encounter that same month, since theirs wasn't yet publicized. According to John Green, a preeminent journalist and author who collected Bigfoot reports in the 1970s. In the summer of 1970, a sighting of a, quote, unknown creature was allegedly reported to the Pike County Sheriff's Department. The town of Louisiana is located in Pike County. An even more timely sighting occurred on June 30th, less than 2 weeks before the Harrison incident. The report was documented by John Schuessler, Assistant Director of the Midwest UFO Network, that's now known as the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. John had become interested in the case. 2 men, identified as Tim and the initials VM, told Schuessler they were fishing that evening along the Quiver River, south of Louisiana, when they looked up to see, quote, someone or something wading into the middle of the river, about 250 feet upstream. At first, they thought it was a person with long hair, since they could only see its shoulders and head above the water. But as they watched, they began to realize it was not a person. It appeared to be a large, hairy creature walking across the river. The thing was tall and strong-looking as it waded with ease across the water. When the thing walked on to the bank, Tim retreated up the embankment. VM stayed where he was for the moment, apparently unseen by the creature as it began walking along the riverbank towards them. When the thing got within about 150 feet, VM also panicked and ran up the hillside to join Tim. When they looked back, the creature was scrambling up the hillside further down the river, as if it had been startled by the commotion. The two frightened fishermen eventually located a ranger from the nearby Quiver River State Park and told him what they'd seen. The ranger was skeptical. However, it wasn't the first weird incident of the evening. Another couple was fishing upstream from the location when they heard grunts and groans as if someone or something was in pain. They were so unnerved by the sounds, they stopped fishing. They, too, found the ranger and reported the incident not long before Tim and VM made their report. The ranger agreed to go with Tim and VM back to the location to recover their fishing gear, which they'd left in their haste. When they arrived, they found no sign of the mysterious creature, but did find what appeared to be large three-toed footprints in the mud where the thing had emerged from the water. At the time, nobody was sure what to make of it. The Quiver River, C-U-I-V-R-E, is 30 miles south of Marzoff Hill, but is essentially connected by a rolling landscape of heavy woods and cornfields which runs along the west bank of the Mississippi River. Not a very long distance, considering the potential range of a large animal. I've been to this very site on the river, and can attest that it's all part of a reasonably wooded area where something could have roamed freely, especially back in those days. A similar water-related sighting was reported to John after he'd been on a St. Louis television station talking about Momo. A woman told Schussler her husband was fishing near Foley, Missouri, when he was terrified by a large, shaggy creature that came up out of the water. The woman said she and the rest of the family had teased him about it, but after hearing the Momo reports, they were not so sure. Foley is also located 30 miles south of Louisiana, just east of the Quiver River. 20 miles south of that location, two teenage girls claimed to have seen a bear-like creature walking upright near a wooded area outside the town of O'Fallon on July 24th around sunset. A short distance away in New Haven, a girl claimed to have seen a gray-colored, hairy creature walking upright in a field during the early morning hours. Another spooky incident, which came to light as a result of the press coverage, involved the dairy farmer, Mr. Windorf, whose bull had been shot by monster hunters. Windorf said that just prior to the Harrison sighting, he was awakened one morning when his dogs began to bark furiously. The dogs always slept outside on the porch and were rarely roused by anything, especially at that hour. It was around 5 a.m., close to the time Windorf got up anyway, so he quickly dressed and went to see what the trouble was. As soon as the farmer opened the kitchen door, the dogs were at his feet, cowering as though they were scared. It was very unusual for his dogs to be frightened, so Windorf stepped outside to have a look around. He immediately felt an eerie silence and smelled an odor that reminded him of firecrackers. As Windorf scanned the area in the hazy morning light, he caught sight of a dark humanoid figure heading across a field in the direction of the Mississippi River. It walked with a, quote, odd shuffling gait and looked something like a, quote, very large man wearing a fur coat. Unnerved, the farmer went inside to retrieve his rifle. When he returned to the porch, he could no longer see the strange figure in the field. He set his rifle down on the porch, keeping it close by just in case. Later, after the sun was overhead, Windorf took a more thorough look around his property. He inspected the areas around his farm buildings, but found nothing disturbed. Afterwards, he drove down to the river in the direction the figure had been heading and got out to look around. There, he found a strange set of tracks leading down to the water. They looked animal-like, but he couldn't tell what kind of animal had made them. With no explanation and no pressing reason to tell anyone outside of his wife, Windorf put the incident out of his mind. Later, when others in the area began to report sightings of a large hairy creature and its suspected footprints, he realized it could have been the same thing he'd seen. He then went on record describing it as something partway between a great big man in a fur overcoat, a bear walking on its hind legs, and a sort of gorilla-like thing. Not all of the Pike County sightings were made public at the time. As with many of these monster cases, some individuals who had encounters didn't want to come forward at the risk of sounding crazy or simply didn't want to get involved in the media circus. One such person was Bill Riley, a man who lived in the nearby town of Hannibal, Missouri. According to Riley, he was chased by some kind of humanoid beast on July 15, 1972, a mere 4 days after Momo was sighted at the Harrison home. In 2001, Riley told a reporter from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that the thing he saw was around 8 feet tall and gave off a horrible stench. Fearing that he would be ridiculed by friends and family, he kept the incident to himself for years before he finally told his story publicly. Around the same time, John Mayer and another man actually chased a large bipedal entity through the woods near Potosi, Missouri. Though the location is almost 150 miles south of Louisiana, it's worth mentioning because of the eerie similarities between his incident and what had been reported up and down the Mississippi riverbank during the Momo frenzy. I first became aware of Mayer's story when I did a presentation at a library in Missouri. He said he's never told many people about the incident, since most just tend to laugh it off. As he told me the details, however, I wasn't laughing. Mayer said he was working as a junior counselor for a YMCA camp during the summer of 1972. One weekend, he and another counselor took a group of kids on an overnight campout to the area of Sunin Lake, which lies in the eastern portion of the Mark Twain National Forest. The location where they set up their tents was on the top of a hill surrounded by heavy woods, at least a mile from the camp's main cabins. That evening, Mayer and the senior counselor, Art, had been sitting around the campfire with the kids, singing songs and telling ghost stories. At around 11 p.m., they sent all the campers to bed. After that, they returned to the campfire to relax a few minutes before retiring themselves. They were sitting around the fire talking when they began to hear something moving in a large bush near the surrounding trees. Thinking it might be an animal, Art suggested they circle both sides of the bush to see if they could flush it out. The bush was quite large, several car lengths, so it wasn't something they could look over or see around. As the two men were coming around the perimeter of the bush, something took off running. Whatever it was sounded large and seemed to be running on two legs. It ran a short distance into the woods and then stopped. Now the counselors began to suspect someone was trying to mess with them. Perhaps another staff member from the main camp had followed and was trying to scare them. Art suggested they retaliate by running down whomever it was and give them a taste of their own medicine, so to speak. Mayer agreed, and upon Art's signal, they began running fast downhill towards the suspect.
We start chasing this guy, and running through these woods and just getting beat to hell by branches and whatnot. But we can clearly see somebody up ahead of us. It's dark. This guy is big and definitely running on two legs. This was no deer or a bear or anything like that. And we are running and running and can't catch this thing. And we get close to the bottom and we start to see a kind of light up ahead. And it's a clearing at the bottom of the hill. And as soon as this thing hits this clearing and realizes we're still chasing it, I mean, it takes off. I mean, there ain't no human running that fast. And gets across that clearing and into the woods across the clearing. And Art and me stop and look at each other and out of breath. And I said, "What the hell was that?" And Art says, "I don't know." And then we kind of realize we're kind of far from everybody else. You know, of course, we don't have any guns, anything like that at that time. And he says, "But I think we better get out of here." And I said, "I think I would agree, you know." And we took off and went back up the hill. We never did catch what we were running after. But the weird thing about it that doesn't match up with anything is that it was huge. It was really fast through those woods. There's no way. Art was on the track team. I mean, there's no way that this thing would have run away from us. And it stunk to high heaven. It was like chasing like a wet horse or something. You know, it had that animal kind of smell to it. And we never did hear or see anything, after that. We never, like I said, we never caught up with it. We really couldn't go out there in the daytime the following day because we were responsible for all those kids out there. So we kind of went back to camp and people told a couple of people and they looked at us like we're lost our mind, asked us what we've been smoking out in the woods and all that stuff. And after that, we didn't tell anybody after that because they just laughed at us. But I'd say it was a full year after that before I started hearing stories about something called Momo. I think I started hearing that in 74, something like that. And I thought, wow, that's kind of weird now because I don't believe in them, but that sure matches what we saw that night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
While the possibility of a human can't be ruled out in this case, the particular characteristics such as the size, speed, and strong odor leave one wondering just what it was they saw. I found John to be an extremely credible witness, so I do not doubt his story. While much of the Momo case falls into the category of Bigfoot, with its profile of a hairy bipedal hominid, it occupies other realms of the paranormal by virtue of the unidentified lights and disembodied voices reported in conjunction with the creature sightings. Whether these things were connected or purely coincidental is a matter of conjecture, but there's no doubt they added to the atmosphere of mystery. The first of the peripheral phenomenon was experienced by Edgar Harrison and his fellow church parishioners on July 14th, when they saw the green and white balls of light prior to hearing the loud growling sound from Marzoff Hill. Growling seems indicative of an animal, but Harrison said they heard another loud noise just before the growling. He described it as a ringing noise, which could be compared to rocks being thrown at a metal water reservoir, not unlike the one which stood atop Marzoff Hill. After an especially loud ring, he heard the growling, which then prompted his family to flee the scene. Details of these noises and lights were sprinkled in the newsprint amid accounts of the creature, while other similarly strange activities were later documented by Fate magazine reporter Richard Crow. According to Crow, on the night of July 26th, witnesses reported seeing a, quote, fireball land or hover atop a large tree near the railroad crossing on River Road, not far from where Ellis Minor claimed to have seen the creature. They said two red spurts of light shot out from it before it zoomed out of sight. For the next three nights, witnesses, including members of the Harrison family, saw more colored lights above a bluff at the north end of River Road. These lights appeared to be signaling back and forth to each other. Miss Lois Shade, Edgar Harrison's sister, estimated that they were about the size of an apple. The Shade family seemed quite lucky as far as aerial phenomenon goes. On Sunday, July 30th, they saw yet another strange light or craft hovering over a thicket at the top of another bluff. Ernest Shade, Lois's husband, described it as being orange at first and then later changing to red and gray. Lois said it was disc-shaped and had what appeared to be lighted windows. The UFO remained there for several hours and then suddenly gave off a red glow before it went straight up into the air and disappeared. More weirdness of the audible kind occurred on the night of August 5th, when Pat Howard and a friend were camping in the Harrison's backyard, presumably on the lookout for Momo. Pat Howard had seen a dark, man-like figure on the morning of July 15th. As they sipped coffee, they heard a strange voice say, "I'll take your cup of coffee." They immediately searched the area, but couldn't find anyone. The disembodied voice was reminiscent of the one reported by Harrison and the college students a few weeks earlier. The connection between Bigfoot-like creatures and UFOs, if any, has been hotly debated among paranormal researchers over the years. While the majority of Bigfoot-type sightings occur without any corresponding UFO activity, there are cases where unusual lights and flying objects are seen within the same vicinity and same time period, causing some to speculate that the creature, or creatures, in question may have originated from some type of alien spacecraft. The Momo case seems to be one of those that blurs the lines, leaving more questions than answers. By mid-August 1972, things were beginning to quiet down in Louisiana. The townsfolk were still vigilant, but for several weeks, no one had reported a sighting of the creature. No UFOs had been seen either. Edgar Harrison was also losing steam. During the commotion, his home had become something of a monster-hunting headquarters with a constant stream of curious visitors, pushy reporters, and a phone that rang off the hook at all hours. Since his family had left the house on July 14th, he had taken a leave of absence from his job at the town waterworks and spent more than 3 weeks straight searching for evidence of the creature. By August, he had lost weight and was both physically and mentally exhausted. The Harrison family needed to get back to some semblance of normal life, but they were reluctant to return to their house at the foot of Marzoff Hill. Edgar decided to move his family to a new residence where his children wouldn't be reminded of their frightening experience every time they went into the backyard. The Momo craze was still reaping tourism benefits for the town, but for the Harrisons, it had stolen their peace. Not only had they been uprooted from their home, but Doris and her brother Terry had become linked to a creature which most looked upon with suspicion or humor. As a result, they often suffered ridicule in addition to constant interruptions by reporters and curiosity seekers. As a father, Edgar desperately wanted to prove their story, if not to the world, then at least to himself. But for all his time and effort, he had failed to find the perpetrator, be it man or monster, which had brought unrest to his town and to his family. By August, suspected footprint evidence of Momo had fallen under the weight of scrutiny. A track, found at the home of Bill Siddarth, who lived close to Marsoff Hill, didn't seem to have come from a real animal. Hayden Hughes, the paranormal investigator from Oklahoma, had made plaster casts of two suspected footprints and taken them back home to be examined by Lawrence Curtis, director of the Oklahoma City Zoo. In a statement to reporters, Curtis admitted it was possible an unknown species of animal could be living in the Missouri forests. However, he felt the tracks themselves had been hoaxed. Other alleged Momo evidence didn't even receive the benefit of examination. Harrison had given Hughes two strands of suspected Momo hair, which were supposed to be sent to the prominent cryptozoologist Ivan Sanderson, who was also a qualified zoologist. But apparently, Sanderson never received them. The Missouri Department of Conservation clung to the belief that if people had seen and heard strange things in the area, then a bear was likely to blame, even though bears were not known to inhabit the area. At the time, bears were extremely rare in Missouri outside the deep woods of the southern Ozarks. That being said, the Missouri Department of Conservation noted that more bears had been drifting up from Arkansas into Missouri, and perhaps a few of these individuals traveled north along the river for a visit to Louisiana. The department cited an incident from Friday, June 28th, in which a woman by the name of Opal Anderson reportedly saw a small black bear near the foot of Marsoff Hill. State Conservation Officer Gus Artis said he was made aware of the report and on Saturday morning spent 2 hours searching for the bear behind her home. He found no signs of it, but noted it would be easy to miss a bear in the heavy undergrowth, and the ground was too dry and gravelly to leave tracks. Now, I suppose a bear could have been responsible for some unusual sounds and footprints, but with its small size, it could hardly be mistaken for a tall, bipedal creature with long hair hanging over its face. This would have required a much larger, shaggier bear with a talent for walking upright on two legs. Conflicting views such as this left Momo to skulk in a fog of speculation as August wrapped up. As it is with so many of these highly publicized monster cases, the media is quick to cover the stories or reprint the articles, but if no reasonable conclusion is found within a month or so, they tend to drop it and move on. It's true that the majority of strange incidents did take place during July of 1972, and that's where you'll find the majority of the major news coverage. But there were residual incidents that either went unreported or were never made public at the time. This progression makes it hard to define any sort of clear-cut end to the matter. If it were an animal, did it simply move on? If it were a hoax, did the perpetrator or perpetrators simply quit the antics? Or had it been one big hallucination for an entire community? On October 29th, 1972, just 30 miles northeast of Louisiana across the river, John Roman and his wife were in the woods near Chestline, Illinois, when he came face to face with something he'll never forget. He said he and his wife were packing up after a camping trip when he took a cigarette break. He was sitting there smoking when he heard a sound behind him. When he turned around, he was shocked to see a huge, hairy, man-like creature standing next to a tree. Roman said he could clearly see its body covered in dark brown hair with wide shoulders. He could only see it from the waist up because it was standing on the downward side of a slope. But unlike most witnesses in the Momo case, he got a view of its facial features. The face looked more human than ape, Roman explained. It's the only thing I can remember in detail to this day. The nose was large and flat, but did not have turned-up nostrils like a gorilla. Its teeth were really big and really yellow, and it had a heavy brow. It looked like a real ugly human. In the summer of 1974, two men encountered the same sort of creature, complete with a putrid smell, while on the Mississippi River Road in nearby Calhoun County, Illinois. It's hard to say whether these Illinois incidents were related to Momo, but they were certainly within the same region and fit the same sort of profile with their descriptions and associated odors. As for Pike County itself, there seems to be one last occurrence of something mysterious before it finally faded away. During my research, I spoke to Joanna Miner, who told me her grandfather had seen something fitting the description of Momo around 1974. Miner said her grandparents lived near Louisiana, close to the river. They were, of course, familiar with the Momo story, but considered it to be total nonsense. That presumption would be challenged one morning as her grandfather drove to work in the early morning hours. As he neared Battle Creek, he noticed a large, human-like figure come up from the woods and move towards the edge of the road some distance ahead. The sun was just beginning to peak above the horizon, and he had his headlamps on, so visibility was fairly good. As he got closer, whatever it was darted across the road with long, quick strides. It appeared to be covered in dark hair and was tall and ape-like, yet stayed upright on 2 feet the entire time. Shocked, her grandfather immediately slowed the vehicle and watched as the thing jumped a ditch and ran into the trees beyond. The location was rather desolate and creepy in the early morning hours, so he quickly sped up and left the area. Whether this was the last time someone saw something that could have been the legendary creature known as Momo, we may never know. However, in many ways, Momo has never left the town of Louisiana or the memory of those whose family members and friends were involved. That sound means it's time for some Monstro Mail. I recently polled the followers of my Facebook page, asking if anyone had a question they would like me to answer on the show. I got a great response with some excellent questions asking my opinion on various topics and about my knowledge of cryptids in specific states. I had 2 questions about the Ohio Grassman, so I figured that's a good one to cover here. Janice Brown asked if I've ever been interested in the Ohio Grassman, noting that there's been thousands of sightings in Ohio, especially in the southern region where the terrain is more hilly and mountainous. Evan Moret also asked for my thoughts on the Ohio Grassman. I'm certainly familiar with the Ohio Grassman legends and sighting reports, and I do find them compelling. I've been to Ohio many times over the years and have enjoyed both the big cities and the beautiful outdoors there. I agree that the state offers a perfect habitat for any potentially undocumented creatures. It's got plenty of forestry and mountainous regions where food and water is plentiful and seclusion is possible. The name Ohio Grassman is essentially a regional name for what most would identify as a Bigfoot. The descriptions are virtually the same as far as it being a tall, hair-covered ape-like entity with the ability to walk upright on 2 legs. There may be some subtle differences or a species adaptation, for example, for the environment that make them unique. But of course, without specimens to compare, we can only speculate. So if we consider the Grassman to be Ohio's Bigfoot, then surely it's one of the most prominent, since Ohio ranks very high on the list of states with the most Bigfoot reports. Use of the Ohio Grassman name can be traced back at least 100 years, long before people in the area were familiar with the term Bigfoot. The Grassman was often thought of as a scary creature, so in some cases it might have been used by a parent or grandparent as sort of a boogeyman to warn children of the dangers in the woods, or to get them to come inside before dark. Use of these regional names is similar to how someone in Missouri might use the term Momo to describe a Bigfoot, even though they may essentially look the same. But I like when these creatures are identified by a unique name. It gives them a bit of their own personality and embeds them more deeply into the culture of an area. And in a world where we are becoming more homogeneous by the day, a bit of culture in our monsters and boogeyman is a good thing. So thanks for all the great questions. I'll consider more of them in future episodes. In the years that followed the wild monster frenzy of 1972, Momo would become an inseparable part of Louisiana town history, if not a mainstay of Missouri folklore, and certainly a part of general cryptid research at large. During the original craze, local disc jockey Bill White recorded a tongue-in-cheek song called Momo the Missouri Monster for one of the radio stations. A local bowling team adopted Momo as their mascot. Their t-shirts depicted a hairy beast with a bowling ball. The amusement park, Six Flags Over Mid-America, even had a ride called Momo. At Halloween, kids began to dress up in homemade Momo costumes, while a few adults constructed huge Momo props to complement their outdoor Halloween decorations. For a period of several years afterwards, the town hosted a Momo Days festival in which residents not only enjoyed fair-type activities, but dressed in matted wigs to celebrate what had become their most famous resident. But this sort of celebration has long since faded. When I visited the town a few years ago, I saw nary a hairy shred of anything that would indicate anyone still remembered or cared. The public library there was hardly impressed with my journalistic pursuit, and it was hard to find residents that would talk about the case, if they even remembered it. However, when I spoke to the most crucial witness, Doris Harrison, who was confronted by the shocking sight of Momo way back in July of 1972, I could tell she would never forget, even if she wanted to. I was lucky enough to speak with her during my research on the case. She was not in the best health, so it was not a long interview, but it was enough to know she has never changed her story since that day or recanted any of the details, though nobody could blame her if she did try to escape the notoriety. She has suffered so much ridicule and doubt, as many witnesses of the strange have over the years. But she held steadfast to the fact that she and her brothers did see something truly bizarre that stood in their backyard, like a defiant, haunting vision of the unknown. Over the years, people have weighed in with various opinions on the case, claiming hoax, hallucinations, or misidentification. But the fact is, we will probably never know the truth surrounding Momo. And regardless of whether it was a cryptid, an alien, or a person in a costume who was very busy running around the Missouri woodlands, witnesses did undoubtedly see something that cannot be easily explained. Something that still inspires investigation and wonder. So much so that whenever something tall, hairy, and monstrous walking on two legs is spotted in the wilds of the Show Me State, it is inevitably referred to as a Momo. A monster that will always roam the wooded hills and dark riverbanks of the realm we call Monstro Bizarro. for a complete and far more detailed examination of this fascinating story, be sure to pick up a copy of my book, Momo, The Strange Case of the Missouri Monster, available on my website or at Amazon. As always, thank you for your support. I'll take your cup of coffee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.